I'm Allison Jacobson. I'm alcoholic. And thank you, Billy, for inviting me to come be a part of this today. It's always, well, I'm not going to lie, it's not always nice to be asked to do something. But I tell you, if I ever get to a point in Alcoholics Anonymous when I'm not willing to do something and willing to serve, something's really wrong, and call my sponsor and let her know. I've got to start off with a quick announcement. Somebody asked me to say at noon, please lock the door because we heard Travis is trying to leave early. So I did my job. I said my announcement. And now that kind of got the little jitters out of me, too. Thank you, Billy, for your talk. I was thinking when he was sharing, I've been listening to Billy and Don Major since I was like 1.5, 2 years sober. And my sobriety date is June 15th, 1993. I'll get that out of the way. So I've been listening to them for quite some time. And, I just love their stories. I love hearing what's going on now and just watching them live their life. When I got here, I did not know how to live. And I still have a bit of a problem learning how to live sometimes. I will tell you, the reason I stayed here when I stayed here is because I got hope here. And I had never gotten hope anywhere else. I had been in and out of psychiatrist's office, psychologist's office, in and out of treatment centers, in and out of everywhere I could get. Lynn likes it when I tell this, but it is the truth. I used to call the psychic hotline for advice on how to live when I was drunk and expected a solution, actually. That's kind of the crazier part. And I bounced in and out of AA for about 9 years before I came here and landed. And during those 9 years, I would have sworn to you that Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work. What was going on was I wasn't doing Alcoholics Anonymous, but I really thought I was. I really thought what AA was don't drink and go to meetings and your life will get better. And yes, it does get better if you don't drink, obviously. You know, AA doesn't work very well if you are still drinking. But there's a lot of stuff to do here, and I wasn't doing any of it. But for 9 years, I thought AA worked for you, but it didn't work for me. And anyway, when I got here and saw how you were living, I could look in your eyes, and your eyes were clear. You were looking each other in the eye, which is something I didn't do for a long time, even in sobriety. And hope was born here, and I didn't have a lot of hope, but certainly not when drinking. And I've gotten desperate a few times in sobriety as well, where I've thought, I've never wanted to go get drunk, but God, I've wanted to run away, you know, and I've wanted to just stay in bed and not have a job to go to and just pull the covers up and turn on some movies and say, let me just stay here for 5 days until I feel better. And, anyway, I'll get into that. I changed my hair and there, everybody knows that by now. And Wednesday night when I got home from the hairdresser, my husband was on the phone, and he literally almost dropped the phone. And I can't repeat what he said, but he did not recognize me. And he thought I was an intruder coming into the home. And I'm not kidding. He will tell you. And then at work the next day, they gave me a nickname. And the funny part, the reason why I bring this up is because this guy at work gave me my new nickname. It was Shanna Fierce or Shauna Fierce or something like that. And he said, gosh, you know, Allison, you got to change your identity. And I thought, boy, I would have paid money to change my identity when I was drinking. I would have. And you know, isn't that the story of our drinking? Always drinking to not be who we are at that moment or that year or that lifetime or whatever it is. You know, even before I took a drink, I did not like myself. I didn't like who I was. I didn't like how I looked. I didn't like my family. And, boy, you know, I didn't like anything about me. I lied all the time. I was afraid all the time. Terrified of people. I still get afraid of people. My legs are a little bit shaky right now just standing up here. And I was remembering the last time I spoke, I was actually with Don Major. And he said something so neat. He said, Allison, in his little, you know, twang voice, don't worry about it. You're going to make an ass out of yourself. It'll be fun or something like that. And so I try to think about that because it takes the pressure off. So thank you. And it was just really sweet that he meant it funny, but now I'm hoping, gosh, I wonder if he was serious. I'll have to ask him later. But so before I took a drink, I did not feel, and everybody understands this, you just feel like you don't fit anywhere. My God, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is the first place in my entire life where I feel like I fit. It is a round peg in a round hole. I don't even feel this comfortable around my blood family, you know. And so I went, that's how I grew up. I just felt funny. I felt like I needed to do extra just to be on even par with you. And lied all the time. I told you I stole all the time. I come from an alcoholic family. Not that I'm real clear about this. That does not make me alcoholic. I did blame that on my alcoholism for a long time. I like what Billy Hogue said about being a victim. I played that to the hilt. I would tell you my tale of woe and get you feeling so very sorry for me. And you would drink too if you grew up the way I did. Oh, God. And, you know, there's people who are far worse off than I ever was, and they don't drink. They're not alcoholic. I'm alcoholic because when I honestly want to, I cannot quit entirely. And when I put alcohol into my system, I don't know what's going to happen. I can't just stop at one. I may set out to have one or two, although I don't know when that ever was. I would set out to, I would tell myself, the little trick I would tell myself is, okay, I'm not going to get super duper drunk tonight and make a complete fool out of myself. And then it always happened anyway. Once I start drinking, I cannot predict the amount I take. I can't. And then when I honestly want to, I cannot quit entirely. That's what differentiates me from a normal social drinker. I have never, ever identified with a social drinker ever in my life. It wouldn't even appeal to me. I remember one of the times back in the 80s when I was in one of my treatment centers, there was stuff on the news about, oh, there's a pill to cure alcoholism. And, you know, if you take this pill, you can just have a couple drinks like everybody else. And I remember real vividly thinking to myself, who would want to have a couple drinks? Who? Not me. A couple drinks just gets it lubricated enough so you can go have 12 more, you know. I've never wanted to have a couple drinks. My mom, who is definitely not alcoholic, sometimes I wish she would have a drink. And she can have, you know, have a little glass of wine and maybe not even drink at all. You know, it'll go down the sink at the end of the night when she does the dishes. I have never, ever thrown out alcohol on purpose. I have drank it with cockroaches in it. I would, you know, because it's alcohol. You do not waste alcohol. That is my mindset. I've thrown out food. I've thrown out clothing. I've thrown out a lot of stuff. I have not thrown out alcohol that I'm aware of. And if I did, it was just pure accident. And maybe I was so drunk I didn't know what I was doing. I don't know. But that's how I think about alcohol. That's my lifeline. That's my solution to living. I love what a speaker said once. They said, alcohol is not their problem, it's their solution. And I thought, isn't that the truth? You know, if alcohol were my problem, all I'd have to do is just stop drinking. I wouldn't need you. I wouldn't need a sponsor. I wouldn't need these steps. I wouldn't be here today because I've stopped drinking and I'm okay. What happens to me that I'm going to talk about today is when I stopped drinking, the crazies set in, and they really do. Alcohol kept me, I guess not uncrazy, but alcohol kept me alive, I suppose. I don't know. If I were stone cold sober with no solution long enough, I don't know what would happen. Life gets really, really bad when I'm stone cold sober with no solution. And I lived that way for a long time. I did not get sober till I was 27, and I tried to start getting sober around the time I was 18. So I told you, I came from an alcoholic family. My father was the alcoholic, and you know, alcoholic families sometimes are very dramatic. I totally related to what Billy said is we didn't talk about anything in our house either, you know, nothing. And my parents would get in such screaming matches. I could be outside playing in the front yard with my friends. You could hear every word of their fight. And I remember just being mortified. And that's like 5, 6, 7 years old. And my reaction to that was I beat up the friend I was playing with. I was just so embarrassed. I didn't know what to do, so I just beat the living hoo-ha out of her and I ran inside. And you know, I'm sure the neighbors knew. We never had the police at our house. We never had any of that kind of thing. But, you know, there was this tension in our house so thick you could cut it with a knife. It was just awful. My father would disappear sometimes for weeks at a time. And that was my brother and I grew up. I do have a brother. We grew up in a time where, you know, moms didn't work. We had a stay-at-home mom. And so if my dad left, so did the money, too. And so it was just, you know, it was a very insecure way to grow up. But oddly enough, you know, out of all of that, I hated my mother. I thought she was the one who drove my dad away. I loved, loved, loved my father. And I just blamed her for everything. And I blamed her for everything well into my sobriety. Good sponsorship took care of that. Anyway, so I got introduced to alcohol when I was 13. I mean, I knew what it was much earlier, but I did not ingest it, and I was not introduced to the effect produced by it until I was about 13 years old. Got super-duper drunk, rolled around, got taken home in an ambulance, and was grounded probably till the end of time, as far as my mom was concerned. And by then, my parents were divorced. They were married to and from each other. And divorced to and from each other twice. So my story is kind of strange. Sometimes my parents are married, sometimes they're not. So I've just given up saying my parents were married or they weren't married. You know, they were married to and from each other and divorced to and from each other twice. So anyway, they were divorced at this time. And my aunt was there, and my aunt and my mom stayed up with me while I was sick and just vomiting and, you know, the whole works. And I got up the next morning and just felt hideous. Didn't remember half of the night because I blacked out. I was a big, big blackout drinker. And some of my friends know more about what I did when drinking than I did. And towards the end of my drinking, I did not want to know. And in the beginning, it was sort of fun to, you know, find out what I did last night. It was sort of exciting. But towards the end, as most of you, I'm sure, know, you don't want to know because people look at you with that look of disgust. And they have no respect for you anymore. They're angry at you. Maybe you did something really harmful to them the night before, and all of a sudden it's just not so funny anymore. And anyway, I was grounded. But I knew, the funny thing was, at that very young age, I knew I was going to do it again. I loved it. I absolutely loved the way alcohol made me feel. I think I've emphasized that enough, but just in case, I loved the way alcohol made me feel. And It took away all that inadequacy. I didn't feel less than you. I felt better than you. I could talk to you. I was funny. I felt pretty. All that stuff. You know, it gave me, I felt that by having alcohol in my life gave me a life, you know. Without it, I just felt, you know, shriveled up like I always did, and just not worth much, not very important, unloved, very much a victim. And give me a few drinks and all that's gone. And God, I felt like I could conquer the world. And so I set out to do that for the next 14 years. And I did anything but that, actually. And, you know, in the beginning of my drinking, it didn't start out. I always had consequences, oddly enough. Every time I drank, there was a consequence. I'd be grounded or I'd sneak out of the house and get caught. I will tell you this right now. I have never been to jail. I have only had one husband, and I married him in sobriety, and I have one child. So I didn't have a lot of, you know, in and out of institutions, in and out of jail. I've had one DUI when I was 16 years old, and my father paid a lawyer to reduce the charge. It does not make me any less alcoholic than you, I can assure you. I hear people come into meetings And they talk about, you know, they're trying to find a sponsor, and they need to get a sponsor that is exactly like them, and blah, 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 blah. This sponsor has kids. I can't have her because I don't have kids. Or this one, you know, whatever, you name it. We've all heard it. And I always think to myself, isn't the fact that we're both alcoholic enough? Isn't that enough in common? What else needs to be in common for one of us to help each other? The fact that I'm alcoholic and you're alcoholic ought to do it. And any sponsor I've had in AA, except for this one, oddly enough, we're both accountants. I did not cheat in math because I finished college when I was sober. And my sponsor today is an accountant. But, you know, my very first sponsor in AA and my second sponsor, my God, I don't even know what religion they were, actually, because we talked about Alcoholics Anonymous. And actually, quite frankly, I don't know what religion Beth is either. Our bond here is Alcoholics Anonymous. And sometimes I think we get so way off track of what we need. And what I need to remember is when I first got here and even today, I'm not a good judge of what I need. If I were to tell you what I need today, it's probably very different from what I really do need. So I just thought I'd throw that in there for whatever it's worth. Anyway, so I started drinking here and there when I was younger in my teen years. I got kicked out of my mother's house in upstate New York, which was fine and dandy by me because I told you she was the cause for every bad feeling I ever had in my life. And I moved to my father's in Virginia, and that's how I landed in Virginia. And my mother had kicked my brother out of the house a year earlier, and so he was with our dad, too. And so I got transplanted to Northern Virginia, and I remember my dad saying, you know, you're going to pretty much the lecture was you're going to straighten up and fly straight kind of thing. And he wanted me to get back into my hobbies. He wanted me to start doing better in school because already – just in a couple of years, all this stuff had gone out the window. I used to like sports. That was gone. I used to love to socialize. That was gone. I used to be a good student. That was definitely gone. And, you know, little by little, alcohol was taking a more and more prominent seat in my life. And if you interfered or threatened to interfere with my drinking, you were gone. And it's strange how you can get up here and say, I threw away people, but I did. And in the end, really, I threw away my family, too. But so my father was wanting me, you know, he's like any parent. He wanted me to be happy. He wanted me to be successful, wanted me to have a good life. And in my mind, I was sitting there thinking, oh, God. So within 1 week, I fell into a crew of people who did exactly what I was doing in upstate New York. They were smoking, they were drinking, and I thought we were having a lot of fun. They were the cool people. I remember my husband talks a lot about always wanting to be cool, and I always wanted that. I guess what I really wanted, I didn't care if it was cool or not. I just wanted you to like me. I just wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be able to go out with you and have you include me. Whether that's cool or not, I don't know. I always, all my life, have struggled with whether you like me or not. I was thinking the other day, we're having some family drama going on right now in my family. And whenever the family drama is going on, it just brings up some stuff. And, you know, I can go back in my life and start reliving these things, which is never good. So it's very, very good that I had to come be here with you today because God knows I'd be sitting on my couch at home trying to take care of my son and get in a lot of good thinking, too. But I was thinking, I remember going to visit my brother in Colorado, God, 14 years ago. I was newly sober and still really, really miss people pleaser. And my brother is very cool, very, you know, very cool. Everything he wears is label brands and just so. And I remember him saying to me, he said, Allison, why don't you put on some of Amy's clothes? This is his wife. He said, why don't you put on some of her clothes and then you can look like you belong in Colorado. And, you know, the sad thing is I did it. Now, if he said that to me, he might get a big punch in the face and a few words. But that is how desperate I was to have you like me, you know. And that's the story of my life. Whatever you asked me to be, I would be it. I was such a good chameleon. it didn't matter what I thought. It didn't matter that you may have just totally devastated me and my feelings. If it meant you not liking me, I couldn't have that. That was just, oh, God, that was awful. So I would do whatever you wanted me to do to fit in with you just so I could go hang out with you for 4 or 5 hours a night. And that's kind of sad, actually. So when I was drinking, it made it a lot easier to do that. And I put a lot of energy into my drinking. Gosh almighty, if I put half as much energy into anything today that I put into drinking, my God, I'd be so far ahead of the game, I wouldn't have to worry. But I did drinking like we drink. If you're an alcoholic of my type, it takes a lot of effort. And we're happy to drop everything that's good and meaningful and purposeful in our lives to put that effort into it. I certainly was. So I've already alienated my mother in upstate New York. Didn't care. I didn't care. I was going to dislike her for probably the next 20 years of my life. And what a waste of energy that is. And so I'm living with my father. I'm running around with the same people. I'm beginning to get in more and more trouble. And then I start driving, and what a nightmare. My son's only 7.5 months old, and I've already decided I don't want him driving. And if I could prevent that, I would. I think my husband's going to think that's a little overbearing. But I think about me at that age, and I think, oh no. As Billy said, what have we done? And so I start driving, and, one of my best girlfriends and I were at a grain alcohol party. Actually, this night she was driving, and I don't know if any of you have had grain alcohol, but my gosh, it knocks you on your feet, and you don't even know what's happened. I don't even remember leaving the party. I remember waking up in a hospital and having an attendant pushing glass out of my head. We had hit a telephone pole head on, going 40 or 50 miles an hour. And the man who I guess drove by and saw the car accident had thought we were dead, and he called the police. And so anyway, obviously we were not dead, but we ruined the car. And I remember, here I am, 16, 17 years old at that time, and all I can think about is myself. I'm so self-absorbed. Our book talks about that, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problem. Alcohol is not our problem, we are. And so, I almost died that evening. My friend, she almost died too. And all I can think is, I'm angry because her mother is bringing the car to the high school and putting it in the front lawn of the high school so we can be an example. And I thought, oh God, I hate her. And her family thought that I was the bad influence, and my family thought that she was the bad influence, and so we weren't allowed to hang around each other. And then 2 months later, with her in the car, I got arrested for the only DUI I've ever had. And that's just, and it wasn't her fault. Hanging around her was not my problem. I hung around her because she did what I wanted to do. I could do it perfectly well by myself. And that's how I ended up drinking by myself alone. But you can't tell my parents that. My dad wanted so badly for this all not to be my fault. And he didn't want to think that his daughter was going downhill. He didn't think, nobody wants to think that about their own kids. So anyway, it was my girlfriend's fault. I wasn't allowed to hang around her, and I did anyway. I have never, ever thought that the rules applied to me. I've never blatantly been rude to authority. I've just ducked it and dodged it all my life. To your face, I'd say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, whatever you want, I understand, no problem. And then the minute you were out of sight, I'd go do what I want. That's how I was with my dad. Very courteous up front. I can put on a show of, I can be who you need me to be. I could make my father think I was listening to him. And in my mind, I'm thinking, the minute he's gone, I'm doing what I want. And that's what I did. And it was like a cat and mouse game all of my high school career. And I applied to several colleges and got into one. And, I don't even know how I got into the one I got into, quite frankly. They must have been low on attendance that year. I don't know. But I went there, and I always say this. It's a big turning point in my story. All of my friends in high school knew I had a drinking problem. They had already started labeling me alcoholic. I had to change friends every few months or so because, you know, we'd go to Georgetown and go to bars, and I'd be the one who got us kicked out because I was so disruptive. Jumped out of moving vehicles on 395, and the guy I was with, and we were fighting, and so I threatened to jump out of the car, and God, I did, and he got a DUI that night, a police saw us, and I mean, you know, it was just really nuts. I did nutty stuff like that, and so after an evening like that, you know, you question your drinking a little bit. I always say I never told myself I would stop drinking. I always told myself if things ever got really, really bad, I'd take a look at it. And everybody, well, I'm not sure everybody, but I always had this sort of line in my mind. If I ever cross this line, I'll take a look at my drinking. Oh, I'll never do this, or I'll never do this. I tried, I don't know how you do it. It's almost like an oxymoron to drink and have morals. But everybody's got their code, and I had my code. And I would think to myself, if I ever do this, I'll have to take a look at things. Never would I dare say I'm going to stop drinking or get sober. You know, that was too drastic. But, and so I went away to college, and my God, I did everything I said I wouldn't do and more. And I didn't stop. You know, what I did was I switched colleges. I can't go back there. You know, I've made too much of a fool out of myself. People are looking at me in the dining hall. I can't face people I don't know, you know, it was just horrible. And that's my drinking career. Change colleges, change this. Eventually, I just stopped going to college because it was too inconvenient to drink and go to college. I just couldn't pull it off. And so by then, I'm already bouncing checks and stealing more money and doing a lot of stuff. So I thought maybe it would be a good idea to work and get some money. And I found that I could work and make my own money and steal yours. And you know, it was just a horrible, horrible way to live. There was so much pressure on me. I was getting warrants for bad checks, and bill collectors were calling me right and left. I couldn't get my mail. I couldn't answer the phone when it was turned on. I always like to say nothing in my apartment was ever turned on all at the same time except for maybe the day I moved into it. And it was just an awful way to live. And that was my early 20s in a nutshell. I didn't bathe. I washed my clothes maybe once a month. My husband knows I do laundry every single day. I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm such a fanatic about it now, because I never – hygiene was a foreign situation to me when I was drinking. And I just – I smelled awful. I looked awful. I was bloated. And the funny – it's not funny, but the funny, bizarre thing is I thought I looked okay. I thought I was doing okay. If I wasn't in jail, then, God, I was a step above other alcoholics I'd heard about. It was just a horrible way to live. When I would pass out at night, or, you know, God forbid, if I ran out of alcohol after midnight and couldn't go get anymore, I would always tell myself, okay, tomorrow I'll be different. Tomorrow I'll clean up. Tomorrow I'll take a shower. I'll go to work. Because, you know, I had turned into a morning drinker in college. And I always say morning was my favorite time in the world to drink, and I don't know why, but it was. I just loved it. And God, on a day like today, Saturday, I would come to around 4 or 5 in the morning, go to the fridge and pop one open, and I was gone. And I just loved it. And being a morning drinker sort of hinders your work schedule a little bit, because you don't know if you're going to go to work or not. And I was a big call-in sick person. I always like to say, you know, I told one employer that the same grandmother died twice, because, you know, you can't just call in sick. After a while, you've got to get real dramatic with the stories, and it was just horrible. And that's the way I lived, and it was no way to live, but nothing's horrible once you're used to it. And that is the life that had become normal to me. And isn't that sad? You know, I told you I drank the beer with cockroaches in it. I lived in a cockroach-infested apartment. If I saw a bug in my home today, I'd probably flip my board. And I lived that way. They were in my bed. I went to work one day. They came crawling out of my shirt pocket. And that's, you know, that's how I live. That was a way of life for me. And now I think back and I think, my gosh, you know, but that's what I did. and couldn't take care of myself, certainly couldn't take care of you, couldn't sustain any kind of meaningful relationship. I, by then, had started calling people in my family in the middle of the night between the hours of usually 12 and 2 and telling them what I thought about them. And I would target my mother a lot because I told you she was the object of my just sheer anger, and I don't want to say hate, but that's what it felt like at the time. And I'd call her a lot. She would turn her phone off. She started unplugging her phone at night, and it was nuts. And then one night, it was one fateful night, I called my brother. And it's strange because if I have time, I'll get into it. My brother and I don't have a very good relationship today, but this night, I called him. And I told him I wanted to kill myself. And I always say this is, for me, and this is just for me, when I say I want to kill myself, that is code for I need attention. It is not that I want to kill myself. It's just, I think you might stay on the phone with me longer if I say something dramatic. And so, anyway, I call him up. I call Stephen up, and I say, you know, whatever I said. And here's what he said to me. He said, Allison, he said, my boss is in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's really into this big book. I had four. I've been to four treatment centers. And he's going to a big book study this weekend. That's back in the day when Joe and Charlie were doing their thing. And if he can get you in, will you go? My God, I thought I was going to drop the phone. I wish I had called my mom that night, you know. It was just... and... you know, talk about God doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. Anyway, that's how I met who is now my husband. And the reason I mention that is because Al introduced me to a life in Alcoholics Anonymous I did not know existed. I had been coming in and out of AA for 9 years telling you it didn't work. I told you, I thought all you did is don't drink, go to meetings, everything will be fine. And let me tell you what would happen when I didn't drink and go to meetings. I got in about 30 grand of credit card debt. I was lying on my timesheets at work so I could get more money, so I could try to get out of some of this debt. You know, that's nice. Steal from Peter to pay Paul or whatever that saying is. I was as dishonest as I'd ever been, and I was without a drink doing it. When I don't drink and go to meetings and don't do anything else, I feel like I am going to just implode. And that's really sort of what does happen to me. Things get so intense. Life gets so unbearable. You are awful, so you need to stay away from me. And I just don't know how to cope. And so I just start doing anything I can. What I didn't know for those 9 years is that I have a spiritual illness. And I've got to treat it with a spiritual solution. I didn't, you know, I spent my whole life thinking that my problem's alcohol and so I need to not drink. I had no idea that what I suffer from is a complete and utter disconnect from any God of my understanding, a complete and utter disconnect from you, my fellow man. That is actually how I connect with the God of my understanding today, is through you. I am so disconnected, and that's why I feel so God-awful inside, and that's why I will go spend money that I don't have, because I don't know what else to do. I don't know what else to do. So I call my brother, and he tells me, he gives me a solution, and I thought, you have got to be kidding me. And I didn't go the whole weekend because I'm not going to sacrifice the whole weekend on AA at that point in my life. But I figured since I did call him at around, you know, probably 1 or 2 in the morning and told him I wanted to kill myself, I needed to show up somewhere that weekend. And so I got introduced to just, it was amazing. I had four big books in my apartment, and I had to look around that teeny tiny efficiency apartment just to find one. It was packed in a box somewhere. And all day Saturday and part of Sunday, I found the solution to what ails me. Is the directions to our steps are in this book. I did not know that. I was really embarrassed. I didn't know where they were. I would look at the steps on the shades at meetings, and I would tell myself in my mind which ones I was going to do and which ones I definitely was not going to do. And I'll tell you, paying back money wasn't high on the list. And and that was the first time in my life that I saw that the directions taking these steps are in that book, and it planted a seed. That is not when I got sober, but I have remembered that, you know, and I'll remember that till the day I die. It planted a seed that I could come to Alcoholics Anonymous. There's something to do here, and there's some hope here. My last drink was so uneventful. It was boring. If I knew it was going to be the last one, maybe I wouldn't have made it so boring, but it was. And I came to AA not with an honest desire to stop drinking, but with an honest desire to save my relationship with my now husband. I don't think it matters what gets you here, whether it's a court slip, whatever it is. It doesn't matter what it is that gets you to walk through this door. I'm a firm believer, though, that in order to stay here, you're going to have to do some things. I wasn't super duper bought into AA when I got here. To tell you the truth, I thought it was a little inconvenient. I was all of a sudden going to a ton of meetings, and I'm a real couch potato. And, you know, all I did the very end of my drinking was sit on the couch, watch TV, and pass out. I mean, that's about as exciting as it got for me. So I don't know why I thought AA was so inconvenient, but I was really missed at having to go out every night to go to a meeting. And I had nothing to do. I was unemployed. It wasn't even like I had to get up in the morning and do anything or be anywhere. But I did. I thought it was a little inconvenient, and I told you I'm horribly afraid of people. And just, my God, I would get a stomach ache sometimes before going to a meeting because I thought I'm going to have to say hello to people. Or, oh, God, what if they call on me in a meeting? Notice how, you know, the theme in my story is I think about me an awful lot. My sponsor always told me that, don't worry, Elson, as busy as you are in AA, you will find time to think about yourself. And she's right, I do. I really do. So I start going to all these meetings, and I start getting introduced to conventions, and so I start going to those. And AL's sponsor at the time was a taper, and I would pitch in there and help tape, or not help tape, but help sell the tapes after the speaker meetings. And that, it, let me tell you, working for Bob Polk was hard. You had to be on your toes. And we would come home from those things exhausted. But that's how we could go to the conventions, because if we worked, we you know, he paid for our registration. And so it was a lot of fun. I started having fun. I should have, you know, I was determined. I was one of those people who came in with a look, you know, on my face that, you know, you're not going to make me enjoy myself, and I'll have a miserable time and be miserable just to spite you. And I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden I started getting more comfortable in AA, and I decided that I could start running my own life again. And that's a bad, bad, bad idea. That's been my problem my whole life. I want to call my own shots. I want, you know, I know what's best for Allison Jacobson, so just let me, you know, I'll give you lip service, but deep down, I know I'm going to apply my own plan to my life. And very difficult to sponsor people like me. You rarely get the truth from me because I don't want you to tell me what to do. I don't want to tell you how much I hate my mom because, my God, you might make me make amends to her. You know, I don't want to tell you my secrets that are looming and now building up in sobriety because, my God, you might make me do something. And, oh, God, what are you going to think of me? For years, it was so important to me what I looked like on the outside. I was dying on the inside. But if I looked okay on the outside, that was fine by me. And that's how I lived for a long time in AA. When I was 9 years sober, everything imploded. Everything. My marriage almost went out the window. That was the darkest time I've had in sobriety, yet it's the best time I've had in sobriety, if that makes any sense. I tend to be one of those people, I reach out to God the most when I'm in a lot of pain. When everything's going fine and dandy, I'm always aware of God's presence in my life. But when everything's going fine and dandy, I have just not mastered reaching out to God that much. It's always when I'm just terrified of tomorrow that I just say, God, please help me. Help me. I will do anything. You know, I'm also the most willing when I'm in a lot of pain. And everything just started falling apart. And because I have this thing of I don't really tell you what's going on, I found myself with no one to talk to. Even my own sponsor didn't know me because I hadn't been telling her anything. So for anybody out there who's not truthful with their sponsor, God, go tell them the truth. That I'll tell you who that hurts. It hurts me. I was having a conversation with my sponsor a couple weeks ago about, you know, some family stuff. It's always with me. My big bugaboo is my family. And she said, the funny thing, Allison, is, you know, you can go ahead and hate them if you want, or hate him. It's my brother. And she said, but really who suffers from that is you. And I thought, oh, boy. I thought, you know, she's right. She said, I sincerely doubt he's at home in Washington State thinking about you right now. And she said, but boy, you're going over and over and over it in your mind day in and day out, aren't you? And I thought, yeah, I am. And, you know, I spent so much time worrying about what I was going to tell my sponsor because, you know, my stuff is just so top secret. And the one who suffers when I withhold information is me, because here I am at 9 years sober, sponsoring women, going to tons of meetings and just going home and dying, just absolutely dying. My sponsor wasn't going home at night dying because I wasn't telling her the truth. As a matter of fact, a sponsor I had who actually passed away, she said, I'm perfectly willing to let people do whatever, you know, they can live in their stuff as long as they want. It doesn't affect my spiritual condition. And I thought, wow. That's right. You know, when I sponsor women, if they're not doing what I suggest, it really doesn't affect my spiritual condition. I know what affects my spiritual condition when I don't attend Alcoholics Anonymous, when I don't participate in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I am not truthful with a sponsor or somebody. It doesn't need to be a sponsor. You can have, you know, if you're not truthful with somebody, that kind of stuff is what affects my spiritual condition. I found out that the circumstances in my life are a direct result of the actions I take. And the actions I take are usually, they reflect my spiritual condition at the time. You know, when I'm feeling like crud and blaming the world, I tend to make poor decisions, you know. That's usually when I tend to lie, or back in the day, that's when I tended to steal. That's when I tended to do a lot of harmful things to people. When I'm doing the best I can, even if I'm not getting what I want, if I'm still okay with the God of my understanding and you, I tend to make better decisions. And the circumstances in my life reflect that. So at 9 years sober, I had to take the steps as they're outlined in our book. I had never done that. I had done things piecemeal up until then. I told you I was one of these, take what you want and leave the rest. I hate that saying, because what you leave might be the very thing you need that saves your life. You know, I told you I'm not a good judge of what I need. So if I'm going to take what I need and leave the rest, I better ask somebody what I need, because I don't know. So I'm taking these steps, and I'm having to make amends to my husband, my mother. Oh, God, I didn't know who I wanted to make amends to least, Al or my mom. I said at one point I would have wanted to be in a coma making amends to Al. I hate admitting that I'm wrong. But you know what? The inability to do that is what's going to kill me. It maybe not physically kill me, but it'll kill me spiritually. It'll take me out of AA. Who cares? You know, who cares? Beth said to me one day, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And you know, it's such a cliche little thing, but there's a lot of truth in that. I will go to my grave defending my need to be right. Sometimes I just want to be right. And if I look at it, though, if my need to be right is killing me and making my relationships defective, I've got to look at that. You know, if I'm unwilling to make amends because I think you owe me more amends, something's wrong with me. It's not wrong with you. And so I started having to look at all this stuff, and that's why we've got, you know, step 6 and 7. I was very unwilling to have anybody remove my defects of character. They were my protection. They were my defense. And I thought they were working, but they were not. They were just, you know, my actions were destroying everything around me. I had to spend 10 years paying all this money back. I told you I got into all of that credit card debt. My God, what a hideous nightmare that was. It took about 10, 11 years. Al and I could not buy a house until I did that. And, you know, God bless him for waiting. And I did it. And I am a person, I don't want to part with my money. I don't. I kind of think, ooh, I'd much rather spend it on myself. And so I did that. And then I'm making amends to my husband. And I made amends to my mother. And I tell you, it's so funny because when I had those experiences, you know, I spent years hanging on to so much anger and so much pettiness and, oh, you treated me this way and I'm going to punish you. And I felt such freedom after making amends to those two people. I wish I had done it sooner. God, I think sometimes I wasted a lot of time just holding a grudge. And can't we hold a grudge? I'm very good at it. Somebody at work the other day was saying to Al, they said, gosh, you don't hold a grudge at all. And I said, no, he's got his wife for that. And I'm still not that advanced. I'll tell you something that just happened just recently. With the little family stuff going on. The other day, I guess it was yesterday, talk about the other day, my mother called me. And my mother, I can count on my hand how many times my mom calls me in a year. So if my mom calls me, usually something's going on. And I answer, well, I listen to the message on my cell phone, and she is just bawling. And I thought, oh, no, so, you know, something hideous has happened. And her boyfriend, it sounds so funny saying that. My mom's almost 73 and has a boyfriend. But they've been living together for 8 years and really in love. And he died. He died 2 nights ago. And let me tell you, this is what a true blue stomp down alcoholic I am. During the course of the conversation, it became clear to me that my mother called my brother first to tell him the news. And as she's telling me what's going on, all I can focus on is, I can't believe she called him. He does nothing for our family. And I have been busting my you-know-what for 15 years, kissing your butt, and you call him first. And I thought, oh, my God, I have got to stop this. So I called my own sponsor, and she's like, oh, my God, Alison. And once again, she said, it's a good thing you're going to that day event tomorrow. And so I really still get funky in my mind. I go to a lot of meetings. I go to at least 4 meetings a week, sometimes more, and I've got an infant. You know, I've got a 7-and-a-half-month-old son. Can you imagine if I went to less? If I went to less meetings, I'd be yelling at my mom the day after her boyfriend passed away. Why didn't you call me first? Why'd you call Stephen? She doesn't need to hear that right now. What you've done for me is you have allowed me to put all that stuff aside. I called my mom 3-4 times yesterday. I asked my husband to call her. He called her. We asked her, you know, what do you need? We will do anything you want us to do. And we meant that. We weren't just giving her lip service. We meant that. And, you know, my mom's got a daughter she can depend on today. She doesn't have to worry about her phone ringing in the middle of the night anymore. She doesn't have to unplug it anymore in the middle of the night. She doesn't have to go to bed with her purse and herself locked in her bedroom because Allison might come over and steal. You know, everybody in my family can absolutely rely on me, in my AA family and my family. My husband doesn't have to worry about how much is on a credit card today. He can ask me, and he knows he's going to get a truthful answer. My life has become more and more of an open book to you. I used to be very shut. You were not going to know me. You were not going to have the goods on me because, my God, you might use it against me one day. I really could care less who knows what about me anymore because it might be helpful to you. It might help another alcoholic. It might be useful one day. So I invite people into my life. I kept you at arm's length for a long, long time, and I told you earlier, I'm the one who suffered because of that. I have a very happy marriage today. I am happy that I am married to the person I am married to. Not all day, every day, and I don't think he is either. You know, people get in their moods and you get on each other's nerves. But at the end of the day, I am very happy with who I am married to. We have a beautiful, beautiful son who's here. He's just, I went through a real, real thing after having him. When he was about 4 months old, I think I was just exhausted. You know, we have a little saying here, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Don't get too much of either, you know, any of those. And I probably was all of them. And I thought, God, I really did understand what Billy said. What have you done? I wasn't sleeping. I was so, you know, I'd go to meetings. I couldn't even focus on what people were saying. And it was just nuts. I found myself getting very, very angry again. I couldn't listen to the ladies I sponsor because, my God, I had a screaming baby on my hands. And, oh, it was just, what helped that a lot was getting an AA babysitter. I could go to meetings and listen. I could, you know, things calm down. I don't do change well. And I have to go through my little cycle of it, and then I cycle out of it. What has always remained constant in my life is my attendance at Alcoholics Anonymous. What has always remained constant in my life is calling my sponsor and telling her the truth. I always have to add that in now, calling her and telling her the truth. Keeping current with the people in my life, letting you know how I'm doing, and taking an interest in how you're doing. God, that was something foreign to me. When I came here, it was like a sponge. I just wanted to get all I could get from you and just suck you dry. I used to liken myself to a tick. I would attach myself to you, suck you dry, and fall off. And that's what I did. I never understood about giving back. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me about giving back. My life and my time aren't so important. You know, my life and my time are not so more important than your life and your time. Everybody's making a sacrifice to be here today. Not just me, not just Don, not just anybody. Everybody's taking time out of their life to come here and help with this event. And I used to walk around thinking that my life and my time were far more important than yours. And I just, you know, if the phone rang, I'd think, who's bugging me now? And that's you know, you have taught me that the phone ringing, I'm lucky my phone rings. You know, I am truly, truly lucky my phone rings. I have been given a life beyond anything I ever imagined here. I have a full life, a life that I'm happy is mine. I no longer sit around thinking, God, I wish I had her life. I wish I had her life. I wish I had her husband. I wish I had this. You know, I don't think that anymore. I love the life I have, and it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks so much for having me.